The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at newbalance.com. What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Pick Six Podcast, CBS Sports Daily NFL Podcast. I'm Will Brinson. I'm your host. It is Tuesday, April 6th, and I am live from a bunker in an undisclosed location for a Super Friends makeup mailbag after we missed last week's Bag O' Mail. Joining me on the show, John Breach, Ryan Wilson. What's up, fellas?
Makeup mailbag sounds like we broke up and this is our Get Back Together podcast where we... By the way, people, you miss it. Hopefully Debo recorded this, but Brinson had 45 minutes of meltdown. It was fantastic.
This was Vesuvius erupting type meltdown by Brinson. You rarely see this. Clearly he has reached his last straw from his bunker, his in-law's house. And you know, you can only take so much before you explode. And Brinson had that. Brinson, it's nice to see you back to normal though.
I'm mostly annoyed that my AirPods won't work with my laptop, which doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But, you know, whatever. The internet here is actually very good. Reminder that if you want a mailbag question answered, you can submit a 5-star review. Also in the feed, Mock Draft Monday 8.0, recorded it last week with Ryan Wilson. We'll have plenty of draft talk coming up over the next month as things get heated up. And while you're at it. You know, while you're subscribing to podcasts and leaving 5-star reviews, don't forget that this week, it's Masters Week, baby. A week unlike any other is finally here. The Masters returns to Augusta National, where Dustin Johnson will defend his green jacket that he earned in November. Go join the First Cut Golf Podcast, where the entire crew is previewing this year's tournament from storylines to picks and even daily fantasy advice. The First Cut has you covered. The First Cut Golf Podcast, available wherever you're listening to this podcast. You can, it's going to be a fun week for the First Cut too, because, Kyle Porter, who are a good friend of the show. He's a big Jordan Spieth fan. And I think he may have made like a veiled, Jesus Easter reference about Jordan Spieth, because Spieth won for the first time since the British Open in 2017 on Sunday at the Valero Texas Open. And now he's one of the top two betting favorites at the Masters, behind only reigning champion DJ. He's ahead of Bryson DeChambeau, ahead of Rory, ahead of Justin Thomas, ahead of fresh father John Rahm. It's crazy.
Well, I haven't watched golf in 10 years. So where's Vijay Singh and Phil Mickelson in all this?
Phil is like 100-1 now.
Okay. That sounds Phil, 10 years ago. That's awesome.
Yeah. No, Phil was like 10-1 10 years ago. I think Vijay's playing. Fun fact. Well, this is not really a fun fact, but, do you remember, Angel Cabrera?
Of course I do.
Right. Breach, you know who Angel Cabrera is?
Of course.
Right. Everybody knows who Angel Cabrera is. Well, I was doing some research for DFS purposes and looked.
Wait. Sorry. Angel Cabrera. Actually, I was confused. Angel Cabrera is the heavyset guy from Argentina.
Correct. Not Miguel Angel Jimenez.
I was thinking of the mechanic. Yeah, gotcha.
That's the mechanic who smokes cigs and does like,
Angel Cabrera, yes. I love him too. Go ahead.
So if you're wondering whether or not you should pick Angel Cabrera in your majors pool, your masters pool, your DFS lineup, I'm going to tell you that's a hard no. And here's why. Here's his latest player update. I think this is on rotowire.com. Cabrera is not in the field for the Masters. Analysis. Cabrera is not as eligible to participate in the Masters as a former champion, but he is in no position to play as he is currently being held in a Brazilian federal prison awaiting extradition to his home country of Argentina.
So that's right. So he won. God, it's been.
Can you bet on how long he'll be in prison?
Probably. You can bet on anything.
I'll take the over because it's a Brazilian prison. who was the guy that he beat for Kentucky in the Masters that year? Remember that?
It was in a playoff.
I think he was a Kentucky golfer.
It's a Chris DeMarco type, but it's not.
He was an old timer. That's right. We can talk about that later, but that's, people are yelling at their iPhone listening devices.
But last week, you kind of expect.
I totally forgot Angel Cabrera won that year. Yeah, there was a playoff too.
Yeah, there was a playoff. Who did? Hold on. He's El Pato. God, what did he win? And it was a 2009 Masters. Oh, Chad Campbell and Kenny Perry.
Kenny Perry is who I was thinking about.
Yeah, Kenny Perry definitely from Kentucky. That was a wild. It's crazy to think about like those three guys being the Masters playoff matchup when you have this like insanely deep group of golfers.
And that was a great finish with three guys and no one. I can't imagine anyone predicted those guys were going to be in the running, but.
I will give you two young sleepers when you're filling out your pool. Scotty Scheffler, my guy, and Will Zalatoris, two guys to look at. Daniel Berger, also a pretty good odds. In terms of odds, is like, I think like 40 to 1, which is way too low for him, and like 8,500 on DraftKings. Anyway.
Normally I'd say don't pay attention to what Brinson's saying, but this is the guy who won $80,000 on Golf DFS. So write that down. Get all your bets in.
Do you think I'll ride that out longer than I wrote out my, like, 36 of my ACT in high school junior year.
Oh, look at that flex. That 30-year-ago flex. Where did that
I was going to say, Brinson's going to ride this out till he spends the last dollar, but I'm thinking he probably already spent all the money. So
let me ask you this, though, Breach. Are you at all concerned that he is crushing golf and he's terrible at DFS on the NFL?
It's a good question. Fair question.
I mean,
I'm actually not that bad on NFL DFS.
All right. At any rate. You did have a 36 ACT, so.
And you have not won 80,000 on football DFS yet.
I also once got a 5 on my AP English exam, which my wife will attest that I didn't stop talking about for the first, like, from like 99 to 2021.
Are you saying that if the three of us were on Jeopardy, you would win?
No, I didn't say that. My AK would kill Jeopardy. She's the best Jeopardy player out of all the group. Breach, I feel like you would convince yourself you'd be the best Jeopardy player. But then when all the categories weren't like cats and serial killers, you'd do this.
Yeah, I don't know. Breach might be sneaky good.
Potpourri.
That's Breach's jam.
All right. Anyway, let's get into the mailbag. Fortunately, I'm actually excited that we're doing, so I'm recording this podcast and like yelling in the guest bedroom here at my in-laws place down in Wilmington. But I'm glad it's a mailbag because that means we're reading reviews and they're mostly 5-star reviews. So we're going to be loudly reading these positive reviews of my podcast and they'll think that I'm just in here screaming at myself, pretending like I have a job, which may or may not be true. From Josh Bretzing via Apple Podcasts, the Ryan Fitzmagic of NFL Podcast, parentheses, super underrated. Okay. I'm a big fan. The best NFL podcast out there. You guys are super underrated. I agree with that. My question is this. When Mahomes signed his massive contract, everyone was talking about how Mahomes was the highest paid athlete in sports. But after seeing Dak get his contract, I'm starting to wonder whether the Mahomes deal was a more genius move than I initially thought. Mahomes will be making $51 million per year until 2031. But if Dak is making 40 per year in 2021, it's not that big of a stretch to imagine someone of Dak's talent could be making $50 million per year by 2026 or 2027. And although Dak is a great QB, he's no Mahomes. Do you think Mahomes' contract will go down as the single best move a GM has made in NFL history?
That's a big ask, but I think he's right in that this contract is actually really attractive given who Patrick Mahomes is. And I think when you look at the details of the contract, let me look at it real quick. Come on, spot track, make that happen.
10 years, $450 million, but he can get up. Our guy mentioned $51 million per year because the incentives in the contract can push it to over $500 million per year.
Well, I mean, I think one of the things about Mahomes' deal that's important to note is that when it was signed, it was widely lauded in all, like on CBSSports.com, on HQ, by pretty much every single NFL, on NFL.com, on ESPN, anywhere, Pro Football Talk, wherever you get your news, is like, this is the biggest contract in professional sports history. But then what you would hear from people who are like big cap guys, like former agents, I mean, Joel Corey wrote about this for us. The guys at Over the Cap pointed it out. I mean, it was sort of obvious once you really dove into it, is that the deal, it wasn't that big. Like, I mean, it's obviously huge, but relative to like the cash flow that Patrick Mahomes got, Deshaun Watson got more money in the first 3 years of his deal cash wise than Patrick Mahomes did. It was a team friendly deal as much as a deal of that size can be team friendly. It allowed the Chiefs to structure things in a way that they could extend players, that they could build out their organization. It allowed them to, you know, even if they signed that contract, they took their $64 in cap space remaining and flipped it into like 42 extensions. And additionally, you know, they're fine this year having, you know, they had to cut some guys, including Mitchell Schwartz and Eric Fisher to create room, and they had to make some maneuvers, but they're fine this year, even though with the cap dropping down to 182.5 million. So I don't think Mahomes, I don't know if it's going to be the greatest deal ever pulled off by a GM. I would even argue that drafting Patrick Mahomes is a better deal. You know, the trade up to get Patrick Mahomes was a better deal than the extension they gave him. But yes, I think anytime you can lock an NFL player into a long-term deal, you're doing something smart because the cap is probably going to rise barring another pandemic. Now, having said all that, they restructured Patrick Mahomes' deal this offseason. So, like, how great of a deal could it have been? You know what I mean? Like, they already had
They didn't have any cap space, so you understand that.
Sure.
I mean, that's part of the reason I did that. So while you were talking, I actually went and looked at SpotTrack, looked at the numbers. So in 2024, and Patrick will still be 29 years old, and Brinson, you and I talked about this on the NFC South podcast last week in terms of Matt Ryan. His cap hits like 45, something like 40 million.
Well, and they just redone Matt Ryan's contract as well.
And if it's post June 1, like, okay, 25 million, you can save yourself in the next 2 years if you want to do that. Great. But 2024, Patrick Mahomes will be 29 years old. A pre-June trade release, the dead cap hit that year is $10 million for Patrick Mahomes, 10-6. Mm. In 2024, it becomes $33 million. So that's huge. But a post June 1st release, it's $6 million in 2024, $4 million in 2025. So $10 million over 2 years if you end up figuring out in 2024 that you want to trade or get rid of them, and it'll be a cap savings of $38 million. So even 3 years out, when he will only be 29 years old, not even 30 years old, there are easy outs to this contract if that's what you're eyeballing. So
there's no dead cap space after 2026 and on. There's no dead cap hit. Like, that means they're out of guaranteed money. Like, he's already – that's what the restructure did, is it pushed everything forward to where he gets most of the guaranteed money over the next 3 or 4 years. So at some point, it's almost like they gave him this deal in order to say, hey, this is a long-term thing. No one's going anywhere. We love Mahomes. We're going to make him the highest-paid player. But it's almost like it's just kind of for headlines. It just goes to show you how – it's like the Taysom Hill thing where they give him a – 3 year. No, I mean, it's not
the Taysom Hill thing was a $100 million contract with $99 million voided out. This is not the Taysom Hill thing.
No, I know that, but I'm saying that like this deal didn't even, Mahomes never even started the deal before they restructured it. Like, they signed the extension. He never even got onto the deal. He's still on his rookie deal, like in terms of like where he is in the money.
Well, I would say this because one thing that Josh asked about is this. You know, is this going to pave the way for Dak Prescott to be making $50 million when he goes in for his next extension? You know, because the contract he just signed expires after the 2024 season. And I don't think it does, because I think what Mahomes' contract does is kind of depress the market. And we saw Tom Brady do this. Like, Tom Brady wasn't necessarily taking less. He just wasn't. He wasn't going to reset the market with any of his contracts when he was going in for negotiation. So it'd be like, yeah, maybe I'll be the highest paid quarterback, but he could have gotten even more than being the highest paid quarterback. He just never wanted that because he wanted people wanted his team to be able to build around him. So if you're Mahomes, you're looking at the same thing. All right, at the end of this deal, I'm going to be the highest paid quarterback in the NFL. You know, you're going to average about $45 million per year. But if you're Dak Prescott, you know, so here's the downside of having Dak's contract. Obviously, you're getting 4 years, $160 million. That is fantastic. It certainly can argue that he's in a better spot than Mahomes. But now you have to survive as long as Mahomes. If you don't play well all 4 of these years, you know, we still haven't seen Dak Prescott in the NFC title game. We've seen him get injured. There's a lot of things that could happen in these next 4 years where he doesn't get another contract that resets the market. You have to be at the top of your game. There are only 3 or 4 quarterbacks in the NFL who are going to be able to approach Mahomes' number in the next year or two. And I think, you know, we'll see Josh Allen sign an extension. He's not going to hit $45 million. I think he'll pass Dak Prescott because that's what agents are going to use as their bargaining chip. We need to make more than Dak does at $40 million a year. So I think the next one we'll see will be like 40.5 or $41 million. We'll see Lamar Jackson in there around that $41 million range. So I think it's going to be a few years before anyone catches up to Mahomes's $45 million a year. And again, it's going to be hard to say, hey, I should be making more than him when he's got 3 Super Bowls, if that's, you know, by 2025 when this is all happening. So I think my takeaway there is that, you know, the Chiefs got a fantastic deal getting him under contract for that long at this price. Mahomes got a fantastic deal because if he cashes all this out, if he gets that $500 million, we're at a point as of today, no NFL player has ever even made $300 million. So there's no guarantee Dak's even going to get there. And, you know, you guys were mentioning all the outs in the Mahomes contract. I think it's unlikely to get rid of him before the contract's over because he plays at such a high level, you know, unless something's wrong with his foot because he's still in that walking boot from his turf toe injury. But he's been healthy. He plays well. They're not going to get rid of him. And so I think this was a great deal for both sides.
Yeah, that's fine. I wasn't saying that it's a Taysom Hill deal. I was more saying that it's like there's a lot of smoke and mirrors to the Mahomes contract that doesn't get reported. It gets treated as like the Chiefs just gave him everything in the entire world. But in reality, you know, like the final 6 years of the deal, like if Mahomes falls off a cliff and isn't very good or like, you know, something bad happens, they can get out of the deal really fast. You know, they'll have paid him a ton of money for 4 or 5 years, but it's very clear. And this is the same thing with the Dak Prescott deal. When you look at it, it's very obvious that they're going to renegotiate a new deal before the end. Like, none of these quarterbacks are seeing the end of their contracts if they're still playing well. They're going to renegotiate going into the next deal. It's that getting from the rookie deal to the second deal is where you have to figure it out. And if you start playing poorly in that second deal, they'll just trade you like Jared Goff or Carson Wentz. All right. Moving on to another question from the what breach?
Uh-oh.
You have one job, Breach.
Mailbag. Thank
you. Mailbag question. Listener, this is from JT31! Via Apple Podcasts. Listener for 3 years, and this is the best podcast out there. The crew does a great job of analysis and are hilarious together. I do miss that one guy that used to dunk on every second. Emergency podcasts are much appreciated. Question for John Breach.
Ooh.
If the Bengals have the number one pick this season, are you taking Trevor Lawrence? If not, what's the move? P.S. Stop talking about Andy Dalton. I don't have my drop.
I was going to say that's Brenton not having the dunk button. He didn't bring it to the in-laws house.
I should have like queued up a Dick Vitale thing on my phone to play.
I'm surprised you didn't bring it. So anytime you dunked on one of your in-laws, you just press the button like, oh, I got you. Dixie-doo, dunk-a-roo.
Should have done that.
Let's see. So, okay. So if the Bengals somehow acquire the number one pick this year, Trevor Lawrence is sitting right there. You have Joe Burrow on your roster. There is certainly an argument to be made. Say you get Trevor Lawrence and you let him battle Burrow, and then whoever loses, you trade him away. You know, you want to lock yourself in having the best quarterback possible. But because this is the Bengals we're talking about, they have so many holes on the roster. I think the only logical move is to bid off the number one pick to the highest payer. You know, you put it on the auction block. You let every team know. You let out publicly. You say, whatever team makes the best offer, that's where we're going to send the number one pick. And you look at some of the craziest trades in draft history. I think the one that came to my mind, because the Bengals had a chance to do it and pass on it because they're dumb, was Ricky Williams, 1999, New Orleans Saints. Mike Ditka was the Saints coach. He basically said, look, I'm going to trade my entire draft plus two future first round picks.
Said he called the Bengals and offered his entire draft.
Well, this was to everyone. I know this is what he said to every team. That's what I'm saying. He put it out there that the Saints were willing to trade their entire draft to move up and take Ricky Williams plus two future first round picks. So you're a franchise. You can be set for a while. If you took this, the Bengals passed on it. Was it Washington that eventually made the deal?
It was, I don't even know.
Was it Washington?
That's Brinson's on vacation.
That's your job, Breach. You're the one who brought it up.
I'm trying to answer.
It's not even in the discussion on the rundown. At no point did Mike Ditka mention until you brought him up.
It was Washington. So Washington gets all of these picks, and New Orleans only had one pick in the entire draft. It was Ricky Williams, obviously. And so that's what you do if you're the Bengals. You find a team that says, we're going to give up our whole draft to get Trevor Lawrence. We'll give you two future first-round picks plus our entire draft this year, and that's what we'll give you to get Trevor Lawrence. And I think the Bengals would have to do something like that.
Well, you know, the story that got told by Mike Holmgren on with, I think, Dave Softy Mailer on Sports Radio KJR in Seattle is that he was sitting there sipping lemonade by the pool, probably in khakis and loafers and like a full button down, sitting next to old Ryan Grigson. And he asked Grigson, if he would take his entire draft, including the number three overall pick, for the number one overall pick in 2012, because Holmgren wanted to draft Andrew Luck. And Grayson, like, he didn't laugh him out of the building, but he like laughed because he thought it was a joke. And Holmgren's like, no, I'm being dead serious. He's like, oh, no, we're not trading the number one overall pick. So in other words, to move up two spots, he was willing to give up the entire rest of his draft, which maybe included two first round picks because they took Brandon Weeden that year as well.
Breach, let me ask you this. So you mentioned that the Bengals aren't one team to trade down typically or move around in the first round. So let's just assume Mike Brown says, I am not moving off that first overall pick. Then who are you taking?
If he's refusing to move off number one?
Yeah.
So you're going to use the number one overall pick?
You have
no choice but to use the number one overall pick. Mike There's Brown no says, other option. That's what you're saying.
Mike Brown
I don't
tells,
think that's even a crazy possibility that Mike Brown would.
He vetoes. He said, we're not trading it.
Yeah,
we're using it. I think you have to take Trevor Lawrence. You can't let him fall to number two and let the second team get all the value. Like, there's so much value with the number one pick this year that it's got to involve Trevor Lawrence. You draft him, you figure out how to trade him in 3 months. You figure out how to trade Joe Burrow in 3 months.
What if Joe Burrow is angry that you draft him and Joe Burrow has a no trade clause and refused to be traded?
Then you're stuck with Trevor Lawrence and Joe Burrow, and you have the best 1-2 quarterback situation in NFL history.
So I think that if you trade, all right, let's say this hypothetically that the Bengals wanted to trade Joe Burrow right now, right? Like a month before the draft, they didn't want to pick. What do they get for Joe Burrow right now?
A first.
The answer is like three first, right?
Not three first. No, you get a first.
At least two.
You get at least two first for Joe Burrow. He looked awesome last year.
Yeah.
Until the Zach Taylor's crap offense and the total lack of an offensive line for the Bengals caused him to shatter his ACL and multiple
other teams. Washington's cheating defense. First, they took out Andy Dalton with that concussion, and then they tore Joe Burrow's ACL. They were going after Bengals quarterbacks. We all saw it.
That's also a weird flex.
I think if you're you can't say you want to take Penei Sewell over Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah, right? No, you can't do that.
Then the Jets are just doing cartwheels because they got Trevor Lawrence at number two. I think you have to do it. It's sort of like what we talked about with the Watson thing, right? Where you have to make a decision about which direction you want to go. You have to decide, are we going Burrow or are we going Trevor Lawrence? And then you have to see, because once you decide that you're going Trevor Lawrence, like if you start trying to look for trade possibilities for Joe Burrow, you have to finish it out. You can't be like, oh, well, we can't get what we wanted. We're going to stick with Joe and trade the number one overall pick. I think you have to decide before, because I mean, then Burrow's just furious. I think you have to decide beforehand what you're going to do if you're the Bengals in this hypothetical. Are we going with Burrow or are we going with the number one and taking Lawrence? And then you just get as much value as you possibly can from the team that's trading for Burrow. I mean, if you're the 49ers, or let's say you're the Panthers, and the Bengals are at one, and they're taking Trevor Lawrence. Aren't the Panthers giving up two or three first-round picks, including number eight and two future ones for Joe Burrow?
I give up two first-round picks. I don't know if I give up three. He's coming off an injury. I mean, he looked good, but you don't know.
He looked really, really good.
Dak Prescott's coming off an injury. He just got a four-year, $160 million contract.
This is Jerry Jones boxed himself in by stupidly using.
Yeah, Jerry Jones waited 2 years and paid him $8 million more a year than he needed to. But yeah, two first-round picks seems reasonable.
Extremely. If we're talking
three first round picks for Deshaun Watson, I think two is enough for Joe Burrow.
I mean, Joe Burrow's cost controlled though.
He's not the player Deshaun Watson is as of right now.
I mean, if we were doing a draft, I mean, I would say that Joe Burrow's knee injury is slightly less concerning than whatever Deshaun Watson's dealing with.
Before Deshaun Watson's outside of football issues came up. No, we're talking about right now.
I mean, I'm just saying we're talking about right now leading up to the draft.
Yeah, I'm not giving up three first-round picks for Joe Burrow because that was the asking price for Deshaun Watson a month ago.
I would rather have Joe Burrow than Deshaun Watson.
Well, that's crazy talk, but you can certainly have that opinion.
Even before the off-field stuff.
Yeah, that's bonkers.
I just think Joe Burrow is that good. I'm not worried about
him. That's straight up crazy.
I don't think
that's because Brinson is now a breach bot. He is on the Burrow bandwagon.
No, that's the thing. It's like if you get Burrow out of Cincinnati, he might flourish and not get hurt and not be cursed by the
You just said he was really good.
Brinson, are the Bengals your dark horse to get to the playoffs out of the AFC?
No. Well, let's see what they do in the draft first.
Yeah, that's going to be the difference.
That's a yes.
No, I'm not picking the Bengals to go to the playoffs. Look, the long way before I can make these predictions, and I need to see Joe Burrow looking healthy. My whole point is that the Bengals are going to ruin him. Whereas if you put him in a good organization, he would flourish and become a superstar franchise facing the NFL type of guy. But instead, he's just going to retire in 3 years, threaten to sue the Bengals, and eventually they'll trade him to wherever Hugh Jackson's currently working.
You know, my favorite part of this review is the stop talking about Andy Dalton part. Just because Dalton's a starting quarterback now, I'm going to try and talk about him as often as possible.
You can't talk about him anymore than you do. I appreciate this person, JT31 exclamation point, asking you to move on from what everyone else has already moved on from years ago.
All right. Lil Hoops 2000. Oh, I missed one. Sorry. D-Shul 2 says best NFL podcast. We appreciate it. Says I'm with you on the Mac Jones train, Ryan. He's better than Tua coming out. But my question as a Lions fan, if Stafford plays 4 to 6 more years as a Ram and wins a Super Bowl and gets into the Hall of Fame, what team does he go in with?
He seems like the type of dude that would wear a Lions hat just because he didn't make waves. He didn't complain. He just very politely asked to be traded, and that's exactly what happened. Finally, after a decade of taking hit after hit, abuse after abuse, playing through the type of injuries that most players wouldn't even be able to walk with. So I feel like he has some loyalty to the Lions in that regard. He didn't leave on bad terms. And maybe he starts his speech out with the Lions hat on and he turns it around backwards to get some people fired up, and there's a Rams logo on the backside of it.
But that would actually be kind of Matthew Staffordish to have like a Lions hat here and then like you flip it around and go backwards and it's a Rams hat right there. And then it at least gives like Colin Coward ammunition for the next 6 months to talk about.
That's funny. We're having this conversation about the Andy Dalton of the NFC. Stafford's never won a playoff game. He's not getting to the Hall of Fame. But I will say real quick.
By the way, if Andy Dalton played for the Lions for 10 years, he would have been dead 4 years ago.
The one thing I will say about Stafford is that I think there's a little misconception with the Hall of Fame because of the Baseball Hall of Fame in Cooperstown. Obviously, those guys, you put a hat on them on their bus that say their team, and that's why people are asking what team when they go in with. But there's nothing like that on an NFL bus. You know, there's not a helmet. There's not a jersey. So you're not really like quote unquote going in with a team. And you know, I agree with you guys on one hand where Stafford seems like the kind of guy that would remember his roots and be like, yeah, you know, my career started in Detroit. But I feel like if you won a few Super Bowls in Los Angeles or just the playoff game. Is that
what
we're
talking about? If he wins a Super Bowl in Los Angeles with the Rams, he is going to be Rams quarterback Matthew Stafford.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying he won't even bring up Detroit. He'll be like, I don't remember those years. What are you talking about? I was never in Detroit.
I think Stafford is like a good enough guy where he will.
So just do it.
Yeah, I agree with Ryan in the sense that he will emphasize how much Detroit taking a chance on him at first overall and being there for so long means to him. And I think like he wanted to win in Detroit. He didn't want to go to Detroit and like eventually get, you know, wash out. But if he goes and, you know, if he goes and dominates for 3 or 4 years in Los Angeles, we're not going to think about Matthew Stafford in a Lions jersey. We're going to think about like seriously, if he goes and wins a Super Bowl and makes another like 2 or 3 deep playoff runs with Sean McVay and the Rams, which I don't think is out of control given his age and his skill set and McVay as a play caller. I mean, we're going to start talking about like, man, what could this guy have been if he'd been drafted by any other organization other than the Lions or even the Bengals, I guess you could include. Oh!
We got to take away the dunked on button. Or we got to bring it back so Brinson doesn't have to do it on his own.
Yeah. Okay. Mailbag question. This is from JJ and NC. Ooh. 5 stars. Love the podcast. Brinson is much funnier than Wilson. Sounds like Hubert Davis is a lock to be Carolina's next head coach. Wilson, your thoughts?
I mean, you're talking about Jonathan Jones, and Jonathan Jones under no circumstances would think that you're funnier than I am. I love Hubert Davis. When I was at Campbell University basketball camp working as a counselor, I must have been in college because Hubert is a little older than me. So he was already out, maybe playing with the Knicks. I don't know if that was his first stop or not, but he was playing in the NBA and he came back to talk about, cause when he joined UNC, I don't know if he was a walk on, but he was, his uncle had played at UNC, Walter Davis, and was a great player at UNC. So Hubert just sort of was, riding those coattails, so to speak, worked really hard, incredibly hard, became one of the best players of that era as a shooter. And, he's been on the bench forever now. I love Hubert Davis. I'm fine with this. It's certainly better than the Matt Doherty hire which has been 20 years ago now almost. Matt Doherty came in, fired everybody, and was took that plane and pointed it straight into the ground. And you know, 3 years later, he was out of work at UNC. He could have gone about that better. I'm sure Hubert will do a much better job in terms of that transition. He's more of a Dean Smith, Coach Gutt, Roy Williams guy, it feels like. And yeah, I'm all in on that.
So, this podcast comes out on Tuesday. The announcement was expected to happen like basically as we finished recording, or the Board of Trustees was calling an emergency meeting to confirm Hubert Davis is the buzz as we're recording this. I think it's really, the Doherty thing is crazy because people sort of forget this, but when Doherty got hired, you know, Carolina likes to keep it all in the family. When Doherty got hired, they had been turned down by Roy Williams and George Karl and Larry Brown, who were coaching the Bucks and the 76ers at the time, respectively, pulled their names out of the search. And this time around, Carolina was like, oh, we're going to hire Mark Few, or maybe we have to settle for Brad Stevens. Or it's like, what? Like, what do you – no, that's – Mark Few is coaching like the night that they – Monday night, like the day we recorded this, when they're thinking about they're going to hire Mark Few, he's coaching in the national championship against Baylor. You know, we'll see – make sure you watch on CBS, of course, but we'll find out who won later. I mean, we'll know by now, you know, who won. My point being is that it was like Carolina – this was almost seemed like sort of a fait accompli the way that Roy Williams retired, kind of catching people out of nowhere. – You know, you're in the middle of the NBA season, so Brad Stevens isn't coming along. Few's a tough pull. Jay Wright said he wasn't interested. And so this isn't like 1985 where you can just go and snipe the best guy at the highest profile school to come to Carolina. Like, this is a, you know, Hubert Davis has been there since 2012, I think, working for Roy Williams. He knows the organization, you know, he knows the everything about Carolina very well, and he's just the guy.
Oh, the most important thing is recruiting. I mean, that's all that matters. So if he gets that, it's fine. It doesn't matter. I mean, obviously,
if you're a good college recruiter, you'll be great.
Because the longest time people were whinging about Roy Williams not being a great coach, that he could recruit. He's both, but obviously he's a great recruiter. So that's at the end of the day, you can be John Wooden as a coach. And if everyone hates you and you're playing with, you know, a bunch of guys who run the 1950s offense, you're going to lose every game. Doesn't matter.
I mean, was John Wooden even a great coach, or is he just like a better coach than his peers?
I think he's probably a pretty good coach.
No, but I mean, like, John Wooden's whole thing is leadership, you know, like motivational.
Let me ask you this. Do you think the Bengals will like some leadership at the top of their organization?
Yeah. I mean, they don't have anything. They don't have X's and O's. They don't have Jimmy's and Joe's. They don't have leadership. So they don't have talent. They don't have anything. Joe Burrow on crutches. All right. Next question. Didn't mean to derail it. Just wanted to get Wilson's thoughts. Breeze, do you have any thoughts on the Carolina basketball hire?
Here's what I have to say about that, Brinson. This is the only basketball hire.
Andy Dalton, if you mention Andy Dalton, in the words of Vince Carter, it's over. The podcast.
The only basketball hires I care about are the Mid-American Conference.
All right. Fair enough.
Mailbag. Nick from Michigan here. Huge fan. I say get dunked on to my kids, wife, and friends daily when I make a valid point.
Love it.
I love it. On NBA trade deadline day, and an interesting thought on NFL draft pick trades. If the NFL adopted the stipulated rule, you can't trade your first round pick in consecutive years. How would that impact QB trade ups? Would pick swaps be a thing?
I didn't know that was a rule. That's how out of the NBA loop I am. So you can't trade your first round pick in consecutive years?
Yeah, basically they don't want you to be able to dump all your first round picks. But in the NFL, you can only trade up to, as we mentioned several times on the show, you can only trade until you're on the clock until their draft starts. You can only trade two future first.
Right.
So I think that rule is sort of in place in the NFL.
How often has an NFL team traded their first round pick in back to back years? Has it happened a lot? I don't feel like it has. And if it has happened, I feel like it'd be a team like the Patriots,
the Rams.
Yeah, but again, they're a good football team. So it was Jalen and Matthew Stafford.
They traded two back-to-back ones for Jalen.
Oh, okay. And then they traded another one for Matthew Stafford. So they went three across.
They've literally not had a first-round pick since they took Jared Goff.
Their last first-round pick was Jared Goff, right?
Yeah. Right.
Sean McVay has never had a first-round pick.
Right, so they traded up for Jared. No, Jared Goff came before Sean McVay.
They traded up for Jared
Goff.
They traded up for Jared Goff and used their future first-round picks for Jared Goff.
Yeah.
So when McVay got there, they didn't have one of those.
So Jeff Fisher did that. Then McVay arrived, and they haven't had one since 2017. Yep. Okay. Got it. So that's four in a row or whatever. But the thing is, that's not a team tanking or just being mismanaged. That's a team that's winning football games. So yeah. I don't know if it has quite the effect. And like I said, I feel like the Patriots have probably done that at some point during their 20-year run. But if the Browns done it, like have the Browns traded first round picks back to back years? I don't think so. Like teams that suck don't trade out of the first round typically, right? I mean, they're always, cause they have a high round pick number one.
Well, I don't think this counts necessarily as like, cause you're talking about the trade deadline, right? So you're not really talking about, like teams not drafting, they're not trading out of the first round. It's more like acquiring players and giving up picks. So, I mean, yes, to answer the question, if you limited the number, the ability to move picks for players, you would probably see more pick swaps than you already do in the sense that teams would be, you'd have to overcompensate. So if you did a pick swap of a first to get a, like, to get a Carson or like a whatever, Will Fuller, let's say the Packers, the Texans wanted a first for Will Fuller, but the Packers had already traded the first and they couldn't. So they swapped first. See, that's why I don't think you do it as much because the volatility feels bigger in the NFL for those first round picks. So like if you do a pick swap in the NBA, you're feeling pretty confident that this organization is not going to magically become one of the 10 best in basketball and you get a crappy pick and like you're, you know, and like you fall behind them. You know what I mean? Like, so the Lakers give up a first round pick. They feel confident that first round pick is going to be late in the first round. And in the NBA, those late first round picks just aren't worth nearly as much as they are in the NFL.
Right. Yeah. I think that's right.
Yeah. So to answer the question, I think there's something built in. I like the concept, but I think there's something built in by virtue of not being able to trade future first.
And we mentioned, obviously the Rams and another team that traded away two first round picks for a player was the Raiders. They got two first round picks for Khalil Mack. And so that trade would not have been allowed if this rule had been in place, if this NBA rule. And I mean, the question here is kind of what impact would that have on trade ups, not whether we should, you know, implement the rule or not. And I think the impact is that you would see more players involved in trades. Cause if you're the Bears and you're trying to acquire a Khalil Mack, but you can't give up two first round picks, you're going to say, all right, we'll give you this first round pick and this extra player that you want. So I just think we would see more players involved in trades if that rule was in the NFL.
Yeah, that's a good point. You wouldn't be able to trade. So like the Rams would not have been able to get Jalen Ramsey the way that they did from the Jaguars.
Right. They would have to come up with something that's one first round pick and then something else, maybe two second round picks, you know.
It would also, I think, suppress the value of a lot of these guys too. Like, you know, Jaguars like, we want two firsts for Jalen Ramsey. But like, I don't know if you can get that. And then they got it. Whereas if, you know, if this rule's in place, it's like, we want, you know, it's like, you can't get that. You know, and if you weren't allowed to trade, yeah, it'd be funky. All right. Let's take a break. When we come back, more mailbag.
It's the UEFA Champions League on Paramount Plus. Europe's top club soccer tournament. Champions versus champions. The best teams facing off in the knockout rounds. Magnificent! And it all takes place
while you're filling out financial reports at work. In the middle of your day, in the middle of your week. So use that second screen. Call in sick. Do whatever you gotta do to tune in Tuesdays and Wednesdays. Nobody watches the UEFA Champions League like us. Stream every match live exclusively on Paramount Plus.
The baseball season is in full swing, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Stanfill, every weekday as we recap every player from every game. We'll talk waiver wire ads, drops, players to trade for, prospects who could make an impact, and everything in between. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.
All right. The best NFL podcast, writes Grace Norman. Definitely the best NFL podcast out there. The hosts do a great job of covering whatever is going on in the football world and explaining it well. This podcast has been the perfect resource for me to stay in on the know of what's going on with all the other teams beside my own. Do you guys have any positive outlooks for Steelers fans this year or even next year if we have a bad season, we get a good draft spot and more cap space, Ryan Wilson?
You know, I'm going to let Breach go first because he has been an admirer of the Steelers from afar. Jealousy has sometimes seeped into his evaluation, and that led to passive aggressiveness that he loves seeing happen to the Steelers at times. It blew up in his face that one time when Vontaze Burfict ran out of the back of the end zone and lost him the game, but we won't talk about that. Breach, how do you feel about the Steelers? Ben Roethlisberger coming back? with now over a year removed from the elbow surgery, issues on defense, issues on offense. How do they feel to you in the AFC North and overall?
Steelers are the new Bengals, Ryan. That's all there is to it. The Bengals were the laughing stocks of the AFC North for so long. Now it's going to be the Steelers. Brinson's prediction was a year early. The man had last place for the Steelers. I do think if I had to make a pick today on this division, I might have the Steelers in last place. And so obviously this is asking about going forward. Wilson, you can, you know, cover the ground looking out into 2, 3, 4, 5 seasons in the future. But as far as this season, even if they draft well, I think this, that 2021 is going to be a struggle.
Well, what's the ceiling on wins?
I mean, they went 12-4 last year. So I don't think
they're the last undefeated team in football last year.
I don't think they're going to crater and go 3-13. I would say somewhere between 6-10 and 10-6.
Wrong on both counts because there's 17 games next year. Breach. That's what we need the dog button.
Well, that's because they're going to forfeit the last game because they're so bad. We give up.
So I think you said previously they could win 10 games. That feels like the high end for me, 10 games. Like a lot has to go right. I always come back to Tomlin won with Doug Hodges and Mason Rudolph, went 8-8 in 2019. So that's the type of coaching performance he's going to have, which means you can't make the mistakes at the end of games, end of halves we've seen him make, and frankly, every other coach make by and large. But Roethlisberger has to be better. The offensive line has to be better. They have to find a running game. They have to replace the 5 or 6 defensive guys they lost. Good news, Tyson Alualu went to Jacksonville and came back. So maybe they can get Mike Hilton to do that from Cincinnati and Bud Dupree from Tennessee. Otherwise, they have to figure out how to replace those players. So I think 9 wins, 9-8, I guess is what it would be. 9 or 10 wins feels about right. I don't know if this is the year they're going to be in last place only because the Bengals are so inept. But if the Bengals get their act together, that could be a problem. I mean, I don't know if you Breach, what are the probabilities of 4 teams going at least 9-8 in that division?
It's not crazy. I mean, the Bengals, like you said, would have to get their act together. It's, I would say of any division.
I know. It's crazy.
I was going to say the AFC North, I would probably put at number 2. If I had to pick any division in the NFL that could produce 4 teams that finish above 500, the AFC North would be my second pick.
I will say this.
Behind the NFC West?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll say this and then Brinson, you can go. I think the Steelers have to think very seriously about a quarterback. There won't be one there at 24. I don't know if you want to trade up for one. It's something to think about though. I mean, 2 years ago, they traded up to 10 to get a linebacker, Devin Bush, who was very good. So that's a possibility. But even in round 2, think about a quarterback and a guy I like a lot, Kellen Mond. I think I had him going. Yeah. In fact, I did have him going, in the second round to the Steelers in my 2-round mock draft that came out, that came out Monday. Sorry. So I think that's something you have to think long and hard about because this is one and done for Roethlisberger. I don't know what plan B is after next year because Mason Rudolph's contract will be up anyway, and Dwayne Haskins is on a 1-year deal. Both those options don't seem particularly encouraging if you're a Steelers fan looking forward.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's weird. Look, I didn't like it when the Chargers just unceremoniously, you know, cut ties and moved on from Phillip Rivers, but it was a clean break and they got Justin Herbert with a high pick in the draft. And I think that was obviously in hindsight, a very smart move. I didn't love the pick at the time, but I think that's really the problem with the Steelers is it feels like they don't know whether to be all in or all out on Ben Roethlisberger. And it's tough to be in their position. You know, like, do they have a good enough, you know, can they really get somebody in the draft? Do they want to take a flyer on a Kellen Mond type? Are they going to wait and reevaluate next offseason? Are they going to find him in sort of no man's land where they're trying to Tommy Maddox it up until they can find their next Ben Roethlisberger? I mean, they've had such a long run. I mean, when you've had Big Ben since 2004, and you're talking about, you know, I mean, 16, 17 years, right, where you've got a franchise quarterback who's playing at a high level and taking you to deep in the playoffs virtually every year, every other season.
He started his career as Josh Allen, and now he is slower than Phillip Rivers. So we've seen the evolution of, right, you know, athletic quarterback to pocket passer, and it's not been pretty.
Right. And I just wonder, and then, you know, they gave Kevin Colbert a 1-year extension, right? So he's only under contract through.
I think he's been doing 1-year extensions for a few years now.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Maybe that's the case. I mean, either way, it feels like something's brewing in Pittsburgh where they are sort of holding on to the past and don't really know how to completely reevaluate. Like,
I think they're holding. I think you're right. I think they're saying, okay, this is the last hurrah this year. Whatever happens, happens. I mean, they're, I don't know what the Super Bowl odds, but they have to be insanely high, even with the crew coming back. This team is worse than last year's team.
Probably 35-1.
Last year's team was much better. We just didn't know about Roethlisberger's arm. And I mean, we still don't know about his arm. And even if he can move, throw, he can't move. So, you know, there's some.
I think there's a decent chance that Big Ben has a Peyton Manning fall off the cliff season in 2020.
The Steelers Super Bowl odds are 30-1. Those are better than the Cardinals.
Yeah, I mean, the Cardinals play an incredibly tough division.
And the Steelers have good coaching. You know, I mean, they have talent on the offensive line. They've lost some pieces, of course. They have, you know, plenty of talent on defense at multiple levels. I mean, with Devin Bush and T.J. Watt and Minka Fitzpatrick, I mean, they can – like, this is not a bad football team. I think – let's set odds on Steelers.
The Super Bowl odds are even with the Patriots, Titans, and Chargers.
Sure, I think that's about right. They're not a team you would expect to get through the Chiefs if they had to play them in the playoffs, but it's certainly possible. Here would be my question. If we were setting odds, so it's like a head-to-head odds situation, right? Like me minus 150 versus Breach in tennis. Steelers versus Bengals, who has the better record? And, of course, there's a tie is a push, right? So it's a head-to-head matchup for the 2020 season. I think the Steelers to have a better record would be like minus 300.
Yeah, I don't think it'd be close.
Yeah, the Bengals to have a better record than the Steelers in 2021 would be like 5-1. Minus 300 plus 500, or maybe like.
What are you taking, Breach?
I mean, I don't disagree. If you're, you know, part of people betting on things is like the allure of the team, and like the Bengals, people are not going to pick the Bengals have a better record over the Steelers without knowing anything about either team. They're just going to say the Steelers are a better run organization. I expect them to perform better. They have better coaching, better everything. So I'm going to go with the Steelers. And especially if all things are even, like if you think genuinely that the Steelers and Bengals have about the same amount of talent on their roster going in this year, you're going to go with the Steelers in that situation because it's the Steelers. So I don't disagree with that at all. I do think the Bengals would probably be like plus 200, plus 250, and the Steelers would probably be about negative 300, which is what Prince said.
There you go.
Yeah. I mean, I think in that situation, I would probably bet on the Bengals just because. Like, if you're expecting to lose the Bengals, but you're losing one unit on the Bengals. If the Bengals beat the Steelers, you lose three units on the Steelers. In other words, I think it's a little bit better value because if you think there's a chance the Steelers come crashing back to earth and the Bengals can take a small step forward, then you can flip it. But even like a bad season from the Steelers might be a good season for the Bengals. That's the problem.
Yes. They went 8-8. That's the worst record they ever had under Mike Tomlin. Let me ask you this and we can move on. Let's say Roethlisberger retires tomorrow or whatever and they don't draft a quarterback. Who do they win more games with? Mason Rudolph or Dwayne Haskins?
No.
The single wing? Can they run the single wing?
Who else is out there?
Those are your two choices. That's
probably,
you have to...
probably Mason Rudolph because he knows the system and he's played. He looked okay against the Browns in that week 17 game.
He didn't look terrible.
Yeah.
I think so. I think that's the right answer. Which just shows you how quickly and how far you can fall as a quote unquote franchise quarterback if you are not studying and you're in the wrong system and everything goes sideways in a hurry.
Exactly. All right. Sun Devil David says 5-star mailbag question. Love the pod. Everything from the detailed breakdowns to the random banter is awesome. Question. Which of the following three quarterbacks do you think would make the best head coach? Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, or Aaron Rodgers? Also, what do you think their coaching styles would look like? Keep up the great work. That's a fun question.
So I think Tom Brady would be like Cliff Kingsbury in terms of being incredibly handsome and stylish on the sidelines. This is a tough question. I think Aaron Rodgers would be like have very little patience. He reminds me a little bit of probably Larry Bird when he coached. He just got frustrated that everyone wasn't as good as he was. He said, I'm out. I think Peyton Manning probably is the best coach of the three. I mean, they all are incredibly smart and it doesn't matter how quickly you're deciphering a defense as a coach because you need the quarterback to do that. But maybe Peyton. Peyton has a longer lineage. His dad played and his brothers and all that and his nephews and whatever. But this is tough. Like, I think it's Peyton, but they all three could suffer from the Larry Bird syndrome in that they just can't understand why everyone is not as good at them at doing what the things they're really good at.
I agree with Wilson there. I would say Peyton Manning would totally be a Sean McVay type. And this, like, Peyton Manning knows everything about every defense. He's watched so much film. He would be in his quarterback's headset until it got shut off. Like, it's going there. It's going there. Call Omaha three times. We're going with this play. We're going with that play. And so, boom, Peyton Manning's your best coach because he's not going to get frustrated with this quarterback. He's going to work with him. I think that Tom Brady, you know, if he's a head coach, he's going to try and have a close relationship with the quarterback. But I think Brady's issue was that if the quarterback didn't have the competitive drive and like want to love a football that Brady has, that would frustrate Brady. Not necessarily not being able to teach the person, but if you realize this guy just doesn't care about it, like I care about it, I can't do this. So I think Brady would be okay. And I think Rodgers would be the one. I don't know if you say this about Wilson or Wilson, I don't know if you said about Rodgers or Brady, but I think Rodgers would be the one, who would just, it would all be too frustrating because, right, you know, he can put the ball anywhere he wants. He's going to be working with someone who can't. I just think Rodgers would say, yeah, I'm not doing this. I'm not being a coach. So I go like, Manning, imagine, Brady,
imagine
Rodgers.
Andy Rodgers trying to, Andy Rodgers. Imagine Aaron Rodgers trying to coach Andy Dalton. He was like, he'd be out after 2 weeks.
So I think Peyton Manning is the easy answer for me. He's like John Fox, but if he was competent.
John Fox, how dare you?
No. Like, just like very chill and like sort of, you know.
John Fox.
No, I mean, like I think Fox and Peyton, also Fox and Peyton are like really good buddies.
Oh, the social team's got to clip this. Manning is like John Fox.
You didn't let me finish. He'd be like John Fox, but competent. And if he'd ever seen a quarterback play before, he'd be very, his demeanor as a coach would be a positive influence on the team. Tom Brady would be like Todd Haley. Tom Brady cusses out everybody. He's constantly screaming and losing his mind. You think he's going to take it well when that team isn't doing good? He's going to blast dudes in the post-game press conferences if they play well. The only thing we've ever heard from Peyton Manning where he's mad at somebody was when he's like, God damn it, Donald! That one time that Donald Brown didn't block for him in Indianapolis. By and large, Peyton Manning knows how to play the game, and Rodgers would be so passive-aggressive. I'm trying to think of who's the coach who, like, gets out there in those interviews and just
That's Todd Haley. Like, Todd Haley was the one, we heard that story where he refused to put in, who's telling that story? Matt Cassel was telling the story where he refused to put in a player that needed to be put in just solely despite Matt Cassel. So I think that's, you got to find another comp for Tom Brady. I don't think Tom Brady's that passive aggressive. But I do understand what you're saying in terms of him having very.
I think Tom Brady would just be cussing everybody out and screaming.
Maybe Bill O'Brien.
What's that?
Bill O'Brien.
Or Bruce Arians.
And ironically, Bill O'Brien, he had a curtsy match once on the sidelines when he was with the Patriots.
I mean, think about all the Aaron Rodgers press conferences we've seen over our lifetimes covering him for the Packers, and like how many times he said something that was a passive aggressive dig at a teammate, a coach, or whatever it was. Or he said, you know, like something profound. Like he says what he thinks. His press conference as a head coach would be incredible. I think all three would be pretty successful at doing what they're doing, but
I don't. Like, coaching's hard, much harder than playing quarterback.
I mean, I don't think these three guys are going to lose a whole lot. Like, I think they can adapt to doing what it would do, but I think Peyton would adapt a lot faster. And I think they would all, the other two guys would definitely need some more like training as OCs and whatnot.
Just to reiterate, you could have gone with Sean McVay, Andy Reid, Sean Payton, Kyle Shanahan. You went with John Fox.
Why would he be like Kyle? I mean,
they're all chill. They're all chill, have great communicators. You went with John Fox. I think Breach is right. This has to be clipped and put on the internet.
Okay.
But only not Brinson saying a more competent John Fox. It just ends with Peyton Manning is John Fox.
This is like saying Trevor Lawrence is just like Andy Dalton, but better.
All right, Montreal.
What
Eric.
Does the fox say?
Hey, gang, Eric from Eric here from Montreal. Love your podcast. I listen daily. You guys are a riot. You're helping me unwind during these strange days. My question is: do you envision a future where teams carry two starting quarterbacks? As a hockey guy first and football second, more and more teams in the NHL are starting to give two goalies more like 60-40 season splits compared to the old days of 80-20. It's far less devastating to your season if the starter goes down with injury, and you can just plug in your 1B and carry on. The 1B QB would actually start like every every 3 to 4 games per season. It's always felt weird to me when a good team loses their QB and everyone just throws in the towel. Thanks, boys.
That's a great question. And soccer does something similar. They have their sort of 1B goalkeeper who plays like the midweek games, and sometimes occasionally he'll give the starter some a respite during the weekend games. I don't know the roster constraints for NHL that might make that easier or harder.
I mean, every team has multiple quarterbacks.
That's the thing. I think the harder issue is finding a good quarterback that you are willing to pay. Number one, there are very few good quarterbacks. And number two, they cost a lot of money. Like Chase Daniels made a ton of money just being a second string quarterback who rarely has to play. Chad Henne hasn't played in a while, but he came in and actually flourished in the handful of snaps against the Browns in that playoff game. But again, it's hard. We just talked about Mason Rudolph and Duck Hodges. That wasn't the plan for the Steelers. Ryan Finley wasn't the plan last year for the Bengals, obviously. So I think that the hard thing is finding a backup who's willing to be a backup and play for start and have starter money when they could go somewhere else and make that money.
Yeah. And like, oh, sorry, Breach.
I would just say that, you know, like we did kind of see this last year with the Dolphins and Tua and Ryan Fitzpatrick. And I think the reason besides this wouldn't work the NFL because one, there's not enough good starting quarterbacks. You would have to have 64 starting level quarterbacks if you're going to play two guys on each team. Two, they'd have to do something about the salary cap because if you're all of a sudden you're a backup quarterback who's starting, you're going to want a lot more money. And maybe the starting quarterback has to take less money. You know, if Dak Prescott's only playing 8 to 10 games per year instead of 17, you know, it's hard to justify it, and not just him, but any quarterback paying them $40 million if they're not playing all 17 games. And then I would say the other part of that, the third part of this, and this is what happens to Brian Flores, is if you're playing two starting quarterbacks, if one gets the hot hand and all of a sudden you're like, we got to get the other guy in there. You know, people are start questioning what you're doing and your decision making if they don't think you have the best quarterback in there.
So I think it's kind of interesting. The Dolphins are a great call too. The other one is, let's not forget about the Saints. Like Sean Payton's kind of been doing this, right? By working in Taysom Hill. And I would anticipate that in 2021, assuming the Saints don't make some crazy move for a quarterback in the offseason as part of a trade or a draft pick, that we see sort of something like this with Jameis Winston and Taysom Hill. I think, you know, if he's willing to pull Drew Brees off the field 10 to 15% of the plays, he's going to definitely be willing to pull Jameis Winston off the field for 30% of the plays. So I think we could see something like this from the Saints in 2021. But to that point, and the same with the Dolphins, is usually if you have a guy at quarterback, a Brady, a Rodgers, a Manning, you know, Mahomes, you know, Josh Allen, et cetera, down the line in terms of elite quarterbacks, you're not going to want to do that because the drop off is so significant. One, and then two, you can see in the case of a guy like Carson Wentz or even Jared Goff, the psychological damage that comes from somebody sort of preferring a backup or giving a backup tons of time. And it just takes away from the prestige and the setup of the backup. Now, thinking back like to an old school option where you could have done this, but they didn't. The Falcons had Matt Shaw behind Michael Vick. I know people, you know, like to laugh about Matt Shaw, but you know, he was kind of a heralded guy coming out of Virginia and he led the league in passing one year. So, you know, and also he appeared on me and Wilson's fan
in 2009. And you know who his offense coordinator was that year?
Yeah, Kyle Shanahan.
Kyle Shanahan.
Yeah, exactly. So I think
that was for Ryan that Mac Jones could work.
Right. I just think that it's more of a credible idea if you don't have a true number one quarterback. And so I think if here's the other, you know, point of reference, the Bears. Andy Dalton / Nick Foles or Mitchell Trubisky / Nick Foles, you know, I guess they sort of rode their way. Like they kind of did it with Foles and Trubisky, but the problem is it doesn't come out as a goalie thing where you're like, oh, we're just playing the guy who's playing really well. It's like, oh, who's the number one? Who's the number one? And it just never works out because fan bases are rabid to have that franchise quarterback in there. And as Ryan points out, if you do eventually find one or two that are good, you're going to have to pay them at some point. So I think it probably does come down to asset allocation to a degree and the fact that when you have that franchise quarterback, you're expecting to have him for 10 years plus. And so you don't end up trying to find the 1B. But yeah, I think there's something to the idea that teams have been a little more aggressive in pursuing backup quarterbacks lately.
Yep. Word. Next. Right.
Pick six pod. Evan from Grafton writes 5 stars, 99% of the time. Okay. Love the show. Very disappointed. That's fair. I would have said 95. The latest Dubin episode. How can JJ3 not be a bargain for the Browns?
I think that's John Johnson Jr.
Oh, yeah. 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 I agree.
Or the John Johnson III.
John Johnson III. Yeah. I was like, JJ. I was like, why is he ripping JJ? I understand the Browns were a dumpster fire forever. We need to start respecting this new front office. Do you guys think they will win the AFC North this year? If anyone comes to Cleveland for the draft, go to Loggerhead Smokehouse, a small drive to get out of downtown, but some of the best barbecue you will ever have. It's a delicious microbrewery. I bet you leave with a growler or a barn burner. Beer for Brinson, Bud Light. Just kidding. Try Rheingeist Hustle IPA, made in Cincinnati, but it's good. Don't let that bother you. Oh, a Cincinnati dunk. You love it.
I will say
this guy taking shots at Cincinnati. I'm not answering this mail.
Was it Levitard? He gets the show. He's taking shots at Cincinnati in the mail.
I think that we've been pretty good. I think we've been pretty good about respecting the new front office and coaching staff, because I was all over the Kevin Stefanski Coach of the Year conversation going back to late last season. We all like Andrew Berry. And, you know, again, you can't say it enough. It's an upgrade over Freddie Kitchens. So that's where we're at. They beat the Steelers in back-to-back weeks, including the playoff game. Should have beaten the Chiefs in the playoffs. And Chad Henne happened. So there's a lot of reasons to like the Browns. Are they going to win the division? I think so. I would say the Ravens are the favorites, and I think the Browns are plus 110. That's too low?
Maybe like 175. Okay. I'll look it up.
I got them right here. Ravens are plus 110. Browns are plus 180.
Okay.
Steelers are plus 340. And the Bengals are plus 2,000. That's some value. That's where the value's at.
The Bengals are 20-1 to win the division.
To win the division.
The Bengals' odds to win the division are worse than the Browns' odds to win the Super Bowl.
And this goober was talking about the Bengals beating the Steelers for third place. Get out of here.
That's value right there. You put $10 down, you win $200. That's smart anyway, people are betting the Bengals.
How do you guys feel about the Browns winning the division? I don't feel terrible about it. I think there's a good chance.
You know, I mean, the only reason I wasn't higher on the Browns last year is that Cleveland, you know, I had the whole philosophy that I thought we would see teams with a lot of consistency at these various positions, offensive line, you know, quarterback's coach, head coach, would be in a much better spot because of the shortened off season of the pandemic. Well, the Browns didn't have that, and it still worked out fine for them. You know, they had a bunch of, you know, two new guys, you know, like Jack Conklin, they drafted a tackle, a whole new coaching staff. That was a huge concern. And Kevin Stefanski's that good. Like he managed to overcome that. And Andrew Berry's been awesome. I mean, this is not your older brother's Browns, even much less your uncle's Browns. And I think the important thing for Cleveland is that because Andrew Berry and Kevin Stefanski are having success, And Paul DePodesta won all these power struggles, they brought in the full analytics approach with Stefanski and Andrew Berry, and it's working. That's the key, is you get something that works, and you get Jimmy Haslam to leave it alone. So you finally have his ear if you're DePodesta, and you can convince him to stop meddling, to stay out of the stuff. You don't have Hugh Jackson there creating chaos with power struggles and John Dorsey doing the same thing. Everybody, for the first time, really since the – Belichick coach, the Browns, is aligned in Cleveland. And I think that's hugely important. So, yeah, I mean, to me, the Browns look like a team that could absolutely win the division. I don't want to fade the Ravens because Baltimore can be that good. But if Lamar Jackson doesn't play better than he did last year, then why can't Cleveland go win? I think Mayfield could take a huge leap forward.
Pop quiz. Do you guys know when the last time was that the Cleveland Browns won the division?
Pop quiz hot shot.
Yeah, I watched it the other day. It holds up kind of well.
Yeah, it is good.
It does hold up well.
My wife fast forwarded through the steamy scenes when we were watching it with our 13-year-old.
Oh, that's too bad. They're pretty steamy.
Of speed? Is there steam?
Like at the end when they're making out?
No, that's Top Gun. Pop Quiz Hot Shot.
Pop Quiz Hot Shot is speed.
Oh, it is?
Yeah, Dennis Hopper.
Dennis Hopper's like
the Hopster. That's Hopper right. Is Easter.
No, the whole point is like Dennis Hopper is listening to Keanu Reeves and what's his name?
Sandra Bullock?
Jeff Daniels?
Yeah, Jeff Daniels, thank you. Oh. He's listening to them. He's hearing them, and they pop quiz each other. And so
I haven't seen it in a while. Gotcha. Yeah. For some reason, I thought that was
So to answer the trivia question, did that give you guys time to Google it?
Top Shot is
the last time the Browns won the division was
1995?
What's your guess, Wilson?
They didn't win it with Brian Hoyer, right? That didn't happen.
What's your guess, Wilson?
They did not.
93.
Both of you are incorrect. 1989. My dad was still playing football. He was in the division that the Browns won. That is how long ago this was. That is amazing.
Bernie Kosar, probably.
And you know what, though? You feel like there's a lot of pressure because this team hadn't been to the playoffs since 2002. They hadn't won a playoff game since 1994. And this feels like kind of the next monkey you get off your back. And so, you know, Ryan, we did the AFC North offseason grades. We gave the Browns an A minus. So I don't know why anyone hated the JJ 3 bargain. I think we did think it was a bargain. I thought the Browns had the best offseason so far. Obviously we still have the draft to come. They had the best offseason so far of any team in the North. They were already good. So yeah, I like them a lot to win the division. If I'd have made a pick right this second, probably taking the Browns, but obviously that could change between now and July.
Yeah, I'm probably going to wait and see if everybody's taking the Browns. I'll probably take the value on the Ravens, but I think it would be one of those two teams.
Brenton, the value's on the Bengals.
Then you should pick the Bengals. By the way, in Dubin's defense, what was the JJ3 contract? I like calling him JJ3, by the way. It was kind of big. It was kind of decent money, I think.
Yeah, good player.
It was 3 years, $33
million. Yeah, see, Dubin's thing was that it was like bargain basement deals. Like he was finding guys that were like just dirt, like really cheap, who ended up being that's a pretty big contract. Not a bad contract, but it's not a small contract, I guess is the point. So good bargain, great player, good move by the Browns, but doesn't necessarily meet the criteria, I think, of what Dubin was trying to do. Gotcha. Final question from 1818 Tim. Ooh, yeah.
He's old.
Well, or maybe he's just British. Love the show, lads. I'm a huge Steelers fan and listen every day from London, England. Love our international listeners. Thank you, Tim, for checking. Oh, this is from Matthew. His name is Matthew. It's 1818 Tim is his username. My question is this. Thanks, Matthew. What happens to the fans of a franchise when they move? Do they generally pick up the fans of the area they move to, or do they keep their old fans? As a Brit and a huge soccer fan, I find the idea of a team moving at all, let alone across a country the size of America, so weird. Here, there were near riotous protests when West Ham moved just a couple of miles across East London. I'm a Tottenham Hotspur fan, and some of our supporters were against building our new stadium, the one the NFL has been played at, on the same ground as the old one. Hope you can help me out. Keep up the great work. Matthew in London. First of all, it hadn't been like that long since the team moved, but
2 years ago.
Yeah, there's two good examples of the teams that moved 2 years ago. One, the Chargers, who moved out of San Diego to Los Angeles, and two, the Raiders, who moved from Oakland to Las Vegas. One of those, because the Chargers fans have become apathetic in the first place in San Diego, left them with zero fans. They have to establish a whole new fans in a whole new city as the second team in that city. And the other one, the Raiders, I think the Oakland fans stayed with them, and they established a new fan base in Las Vegas that's given them a pretty good number of fans. But we also don't know because they haven't played a full season with fans in their own city.
I'll chime in here real quick just because I lived in both of those cities.
I was going to say that, Breach. I was going to introduce you, but you were such a hurry to interrupt me. I was going to say Breach has lived in San Diego and he's lived in Oakland. He forced both those teams to leave.
The Titans are screwed, basically.
Yes. That's what it sounds like. But I was in Oakland from 2011 to 2015, and that was the end of that was where the Carson, California bid came up. So the Raiders were gone. It was just a matter of when they were going to leave, and you can see the fans kind of San Antonio, everything. Fans, you know, and Brenton, you kind of just talked about with the Raiders fans not really jumping off the bandwagon because that's what you do when you move. But the Raiders had a history of moving, yes. So they were just kind of used to it. And so that was the expectation. There were definitely fans that were upset about it. You have this faction of fans that are like, well, I'm never going to cheer for them again. But with the Raiders, that was a small, small number because they have fans in Los Angeles. They have fans all over Southern California. Now have fans in Las Vegas. They still have fans in the Bay Area. So I think the Raiders are going to be fine. I think we'll see all their games sell out next year when fans are allowed to attend. With the Chargers, that was way different. I mean, I was at their practice facility the day after the move was announced, in January 2017, and there was fans having a bonfire at the practice facility. You can find this on my Instagram page somewhere. I don't know. I have a picture of it.
No, thanks.
They just made a giant a pile of jerseys and everything and just lit it. And Chargers fans basically said, F it. We're done with this. So I think one of three things are going to happen. You either give up on your team.
But wait a second, Breach. It's important to note that Chargers and the mayor of San Diego tried to work with them getting a new stadium. And at that point, it seemed like the Spanish family is like, no, we're leaving no matter what.
Well, and so that's a big part of it is that a lot of the fans felt that the Chargers negotiated in bad faith where the city said, hey, we have the stadium proposal. We can put it where Qualcomm is. Qualcomm's not downtown. It's like 10 miles outside downtown. And then the Chargers kind of shot back and said, no, we want this $2 billion stadium and it's got to be downtown. And then there was no negotiating. And so the Chargers looked like the bad guys. They are the bad guys. I'm sure Chargers fans are just reveling in the fact that the Spanos family is now fighting and might be forced to sell the team because the sister is saying we're so broke. We're $350 million in debt. It's because Dean Spanos has no idea what he's doing running a football team. So yes, I'm sure Chargers fans love that, but really, so you either follow the team when they move.
I mean, Breach, I was going to say too, like a good, the ownership is a really good point. And to tie that in with the Los Angeles thing, Rams fans hate, like they hate the Rams, like St. Louis fans from people who are in St. Louis hate the Rams or hate at least Stan Kroenke because of the, they believe that he also negotiated in bad faith and that, you know, and this is why people also don't like the NFL. They feel like it was a forced push to Los Angeles to make Los Angeles happen. Whereas at least with the Raiders, it feels like Mark Davis, it feels like Oakland, the city of Oakland and whoever was trying to do the negotiation was like just not interested in it. And eventually they just had to move and it felt like they got boxed out of LA. So I think, and he's also Al Davis's son. I think all that sort of matters too, right?
And they weren't going to get any tax money with the Raiders because that California just doesn't do that. It's impossible to get a stadium built. Stan Kroenke paid for the stadium out of his own pocket in Los Angeles. That's the only reason that got built. You're just not going to get any help. Vegas gave them like hundreds of millions of dollars to build that stadium there. And so that was the difference. And I think Raiders fans realized that. They said, hey, look, you're not going to get the tax money in California. We'll follow you. It's a short flight to Vegas. We'll figure it out. But with Chargers fans, it was some picked a new team. Some stopped watching football. There was a few people who stuck with the team, but obviously not much. If you've watched their games, fans don't attend. So I think it's generally one of those three routes that happens when a team leaves. Stop watching football together, picking a team, or sticking with the team.
So, Brinson, who's your favorite Tottenham player?
Harry Kane. Thanks for asking.
Very good.
Boom! You love to see it. The other thing, too, I think, God, why don't I have my dunked on music when I'm the one time I got a soccer
one interview. Time you got a soccer one, right?
The other two examples I would give, I think, that makes sense in the discussion. We've mentioned the Browns several times, right? The Browns left and went to Baltimore and became the Baltimore Ravens. Browns fans hate the Ravens and they hate Art Modell for moving them and they hate everything about the Baltimore franchise more, even more so than they hate the Steelers or the Bengals because they are the old Browns and especially because they won two Super Bowls since they got to Baltimore. But those fans, because they hated Baltimore so much, would not become Ravens fans. So they changed the team name when they moved and then the NFL gave Cleveland a new Browns team and those fans all just became fans of the new Browns team, which is why they're so long suffering. It's been since 99 since they returned. The other example of that, the Houston Oilers moved to Tennessee and Houston fans hated Bud Adams because he's dead now. And they hated the Tennessee Titans franchise and they hated everything about that team. And then they just became Houston Texans fans when the NFL awarded them a new franchise. We're not seeing that quite as much just because there hadn't been expansion since then. And I don't know that I don't know when we'll see it again. And if one of those teams that used to have a franchise will end up getting it as a result, like I don't see them dropping.
Well, if you're going to move a team, the Bengals are the first team you should move. So maybe that happens before you
get Jacksonville, Ryan.
And then there was one more example I had of a team. The Colts. Yeah. The Baltimore Colts and the Ravens replaced the Colts who had moved to Indianapolis. And, you know, was it the Colts or the Ravens? Was it the Colts or the Browns who moved under it was the Colts when the old Jim Irsay's dad moved them, backed up the Mayflower moving trucks in the middle of the night. It was the Colts, not the Browns, right?
I think so. The Mayflower could have moved both teams.
Yeah, it's 1984. The Baltimore Colts packed it up and moved to Indy.
But in like the shadow of darkness, like they rolled these moving trucks in overnight, piled other stuff in and rolled out to Indy and they were just done. Like that's how stuff worked back in the 80s. You could get a little crazy with it. Now it's like there has to be formal meetings and like, you know.
Or some butthole with a camera on his phone is taking video of you backing up the truck. Like, hey, what are they doing?
Hey! I'm trying to think, are there any other examples of franchises moving? I mean, by and large, I think it all depends on the relationship. Maybe you could even say that the only one that hasn't been contentious.
St. Louis. Also moved to Arizona, right? Isn't that right?
Yeah, that was real a long time ago.
Well, I mean, you've had teams almost move. The Patriots almost moved until Robert Kraft bought them. The Seahawks almost moved to Southern California until Paul Allen bought them. So there's been teams that almost moved, but then, ownership stepped in and saved
That must have been in the 80s because I remember watching the St. Louis Rams St. Louis Cardinals, moved to Arizona, because Arizona Cardinals are a weird mascot. I don't think there are many Cardinals in Arizona.
They were the Phoenix Cardinals for a while, and then they switched it to Arizona.
Because the Rams started in L.A., then they went to St. Louis, and they came back. Yeah, that's right. So St. Louis, they can't buy a, they can't catch
it. I mean, also, like, these nomadic teams, I mean, no surprise, but these teams that are nomads or, you know, that bounce around tend not to have great fan bases. You know, like, they don't have a stronger fan base. Whereas, you know, so, I mean, it's sort of like the old basketball bit, right, where it's like, you know, the Lakers moved to Los Angeles where they don't have a lake or they don't have lakes. The Jazz moved to Utah where they don't allow music of any kind. You know, teams are bouncing around all over the place. But I think the overwhelming majority of these moves result, it doesn't happen because a team is successful and the fan base is happy and spending tons of money. It happens because things are typically going poorly and the government in the area isn't willing to cough up cash. The fans aren't happy. And so what ends up happening is these teams move and the fans hate them as a result. I think the Raiders might be the only real example of a team that moved that, you know, is still going to have support from an old fan base. And that's mostly because, as Breach points out, Al Davis had bounced them back from, you know, Oakland to LA, back to Oakland again. They dealt with that and it just sort of, they were sort of like a motorcycle game.
Well, the other thing Al Davis did was he painted a picture of, it's the NFL against us. We can't stay here because the NFL is not letting us. We can't get this stuff done. So you kind of put the blame on the NFL. So telling the fans, hey, if you're mad about us moving, you're mad at the NFL. You're not mad at us. You can stay our fans.
What you're saying, Breach, is that the system is rigged. Got it. All right, let's go. I got to do a radio. And before that, I got to go potty.
You
got to
go. Did you say potty?
It's a rated G show.
Let's see. You got to go tinkle.
That's Ryan's way of ending the podcast.
All right, Ryan's
Wilson out.
See you guys later. See you on Wednesday.
Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
You ready, Bob?
Well, all right.
Audiences are raving. Bob Marley is electrifying. It's the feel-good movie of the year.
You dig?
Bob Marley: One Love. Rated PG-13. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.